Well, welcome. It's 9:30. Can everyone hear me? Can you hear me all right? All right. My name is Marianne Hipp. Welcome to this class management workshop. Before we begin, let's say a quick word of prayer. Let's bow our heads. Dear Heavenly Father, I just want to thank you for this opportunity to work with these educators. May my words today be your message for them. Bless us in our efforts to serve you this coming year. May you keep us in the center of your will. I just ask all this in Jesus Christ's name. Amen. Well, as I said, my name is Marianne Hipp, and I'm a fourth grade teacher at Grace Academy in Georgetown, Texas. I've been a teacher there for the last 10 years, and during that time, I've taught first grade through fourth grade. But back in my 20s, I was a government school teacher. I was a public school teacher, and I taught everything from advanced placement seniors to hormone-challenged 7th and 8th graders. So over the years, I've developed a system of routines and procedures because I'm naturally a little disorganized. I don't know about you, but I've always worked off the pile system. So on my desk, I might have 7 piles. I know the paper is in one of those piles, but I just can't quite find it. So I still use my pile system, but I use it to a better advantage. Well, in our culture, when we think about procedures and routines and practices, we think, well, they're good for surgeons. You know, we want those for hospitals. But are they really necessary in day-to-day teaching? A teacher who uses procedures and routines daily can be thought of as maybe a little staid or old-fashioned, or at worst, maybe a little obsessive-compulsive or OCD. Well, what does the Bible have to say about order? A time to do something, a time not to do something. It says, train up a child in the way he should go. Even when he's old, he will not depart from it, from Proverbs. But everything should be done in a fitting and orderly way, from Corinthians. For God is not a God of disorder, but of peace, from Corinthians, my favorite. I think creation itself is God's finest example of order and beauty. The Jewish year and its observations, its holidays, are ordered by the seasons. In the Feast of Passover, the Feast of Tabernacles, Purim, which is, of course, the story of Esther and her triumph over Haman. Spring, winter, summer, and fall. God's truth and faithfulness to his people is taught from the older generation to the younger. We see God's usefulness of his order every day. We use it in math, physics, chemistry. So what are procedures and routines? What do they do for children? Well, most child experts agree, first of all, they're a safe haven. I know several years ago when I was teaching first grade, it was the last day of school, and I was just as excited as the kids. It was the last day of school. And I said, it's the last day of school. And everyone was so excited except one little boy. And he was just imploded in his chair and crying, and we all ran over to him. And I said, what's wrong? And he said, I'm going to miss this. And I'm thinking, surely he's not going to miss me. He's going to miss his friends. And I said, you're going to miss your friends? And he said, no, I'm going to miss all this. And he pointed around the room to our workstations and the board. And I realized that inadvertently, I had created a safe haven just by having procedures and a way of doing something each day. Well, routines are also a way for a child to gain mastery over their selfish nature. What Freud calls their id, their basic desires. A child who embraces good work routines develops good habits, such as time management. By the time they're in fourth grade, they pretty much know their homework isn't going away. Time management builds character. It builds traits such as responsibility in the child and a good reputation through their trustworthiness. This makes them, in turn, good fathers, good mothers, good employees, good teachers. All this builds a child's confidence. I don't mean confidence in a public school, we just need to be happy all the time confidence, but a confidence gained through work well done and blessings from being obedient and having a sense of accomplishment. Well, what do procedures and routines do for you? You're the teacher. Well, they help you stay on your lesson plans. I don't know about you, but I teach 7 subjects. There are certain subjects I like better than others. There are certain things I get off on tangents, and I like to do that. But with procedures and routines and a schedule in place, I can stay on task too. You're less stressed for time because you're prepared. This makes you more professional. I really learned that over the years, children are like horses and they smell fear. And when you're disorganized, your day just isn't going to go well. And of course, procedures and routines keep you from nagging to keeping the kids on track. And then you have more time for the creative fun. You might have more time for an extra game of Scrabble or hunting for tadpoles. Or in this case, we are pretending we're Michelangelo working on the Sistine Chapel with pastels. Well, it's important also, part of your routine is since you're spending, how many of you are homeroom teachers out there? A few of you. Okay, so you spend your time in a room for a long period of the day. It's important that you create a good place to learn. School is your second home for the teacher as well as the student. So you need to create beauty and pique their interest. This room needs to cater to your wishes as well, because you're spending your time there. If you're happy, you're going to be a better teacher. I have 3 places that I teach from. This is a picture of where I sit with the kids on the floor. And it's just a little antique, beat-up table. I'm just waiting for that chair to collapse on me anytime. I've had it for about 10 years. But I have a little light there, and some girls have brought me in a styrofoam cup some wildflowers. It's where I keep my Bible. But this is actually one of my teaching stations. So this is where I do my Bible work, my prayer time. It's where we do our announcements. And it's where I do my Book of the Week intro. And so on a back table, I have a great spot where I will highlight a book. And it can be from everyday life. For example, I'm still one of those people that gets a hard copy of the paper. No, that's really antique. But everything with the Eurozone, you know, I teach 4th grade, so we're doing medieval history. And we spend all our time pretty much in Europe. There's just great fodder for me almost every day in the Wall Street Journal. Here's today's paper, and it shows Greek Orthodox priests. We talk about the East-West Schism, how certain priests, you can tell if they're Roman Catholic versus Eastern Orthodox by the way they look. This I might talk about in this little time and then put it on the back table. Or how many of you get National Geographic? You know, these are great things to bring to class. I just get it for school. This ties in perfectly with my natural history. We do the solar system. How many of you know anything about Estonia? Okay, see, I don't either. But it's a country that we teach in 4th grade. In here, there is a little section of their forests. They are just this pristine, beautiful pine tree forest with these special owls. So I would talk about that and put it on my back table. I have their work posted. I think as a teacher, it's always important. Kids want to know what's coming up next. Anything, I always have up on my whiteboard. And then I also have a lecture podium. So it's up front, and it's where I roll out my lessons. So I have my lecture podium with the whiteboard behind it, my little table, and my desk. And my desk is actually where I check work. It's where I do my one-on-one time, whether it's a math lesson or a grammar or a composition paper where I need a little more one-on-one time. And what I've learned is having a good place to learn also means sometimes the question box is closed. And that on its face, that says that sounds horrible. A teacher is not taking questions. But if I'm working at my desk, sometimes I'm also loading grades on RenWeb. I'm also answering a quick email from a parent. And if that child has a question, and I've already rolled out the assignment, I have a procedure for where they come, where they line up, where they stay, until I say, okay, what do you have for me? That way they don't see what's on my desk, and I'm controlling the questions coming in. Because you always have those children that just love you and they want to hang on you, you know, and pretty soon the line is up there and they're just gathered around you and you're trying to, you know, turn grades over and organize your desk so they don't see things. And so they wait. And sometimes I'll just say, you know, the question box is closed. It'll be open in a few minutes. Maybe I need some water. Maybe I need to take an aspirin. Or maybe I just know those two children in the back that have not listened to the instructions just need to read the instructions. So it just gives you a few moments. I'm talking 3-4 minutes tops to collect what you need to do. And then you say, the question box is open. And many times what will happen is those children in the back that wanted to come up, all of a sudden they don't come up. And I'll say, do you have any questions back there? And they'll say, nah, I got it. So it's just a great little tool. This is how my desk looks each morning when I walk in. Now, it does not look like this throughout the day, but I do not like walking into a messy room or messy desk in the morning. I try and keep up with my grading daily. Even with compositions, I'm looking at really 48 hours. Mainly because I've taught so long, there's always those students that they're on a B minus, and if you do not get to their work, all of a sudden it's the end of the quarter and they've slipped into a C. Moms and dads do not like surprises. And also, you need to know where you stand with your tests. I mean, were there questions that everyone struggled with? You need to get a hold on that right away. So you'll see on my desk, there's a tray in front of my Math 65 Saxon, that gray workbook. When that's pretty full, I stay late and I grade everything. For my day, when I walk in the morning, carpal time the day before, or maybe, you know, even at 4 o'clock, I have all my work ready for the morning, laid out until my first break. So for me, this year, my first break was about 11 o'clock. So I would have all my math, my Bible, my history worksheets all ready to the left, all my books laid out in order, marked, so that any interruptions, which you get a lot of them in the morning, if you're like me, that's when moms walk into the classroom, that's when administrators want to talk to you, your most important time of the day, you get a lot of interruptions. And you're ready. If you do get interruptions, there's work up on the board, and you have everything all laid out. Also, every couple weeks, this is just some of my artwork that I have them do. Every 2 weeks, I have the children do one particular incident from a history or Bible event that we've studied. This one you can tell, I took this picture toward the end of the year, and it was the fall of Constantinople. And you can see up at the top, she's drawn a big line down the middle. It's where the Hagia Sophia, you know, the Christian basilica built by Justinian the Great, this beautiful Christian mosaic ode to God, was turned into a Muslim mosque with the fall. And you see the cannonballs because they had
cannonballs, and that's how they got through the three layers of walls in Constantinople. So I do one of these pictures, and it has to be very detailed, every couple weeks. It can be from Bible or history. And it's just, they love to see their artwork up. And it's a way to pique their interest. I have a very colorful timeline. I have all my monarchs above it. And I really inherited this idea from another teacher that I kind of took her place. She went up to teach 7th and 8th graders. But she had this beautiful history timeline with all of her events on it. And I basically copied it with more colorful pictures. And it just really adds to my room. My Bible timeline, we do the minor and the major prophets. I added all of the kings with a little crown above their names and the queens that were under those prophets. So when they're taking their Bible test, they can look up there. There's no misspellings. They can look. So all of this just adds to creating a great place to work for the children and for me. Also, I make sure that I have everything I need for the day. Headache pills, snacks, water, my ubiquitous cup of coffee, and the most important thing for teaching fourth grade, room freshener. Well, we're in the people business, so you have to expect the unexpected. You can plan and you can have all the procedures in place you want, but you will have interruptions. You will have emergency visits by the office or by parents coming in wanting to collect work, at least in my school. So what I do is I have everything posted for my morning so that if I get pulled away, the kids are busy working. They know what to do. One of the best things I did about 5 years ago was I just posted my schedule up on the board. Now, it's a big waste of my whiteboard, the space, but in our school, sometimes the schedule changes after school begins. So, you know, this is very old school. You could do it in a much prettier and more compact way. But it just fends off all those questions, what's coming next? When's lunch? It's great for substitutes. You don't have to scramble and try and find a copy of your schedule. If your headmaster's looking for you, he walks in your room. Ah, I can't find her now. She's at recess or she's at lunch. So it's just a great thing. I have my rules. I have my homework up on the board so that when they walk in the room, they know exactly what was supposed to be completed the night before, and they put it in my tray. And I use my kids as helpers. I think that's very important that you design your jobs for your children, if you're a homeroom teacher, to help you. What I do is I have jobs to keep the room neat and to keep the work flowing. All this keeps the interruptions at a minimum. There's my sort of old school looking job board. It's that orange thing. The cubby monarch, that top job, I don't know if you can see it. That person's job is to make sure all the backpacks are lined up, no one's juice is dripping down the floor, all the books are kind of lined up by the end of the day. And at the end of 2 weeks, we vote. Was he a good cubby monarch? You know, did Clayton do a good job? And if he did, you know, he gets candy or he gets fruit. Or my kids still love stickers, even though they're in fourth grade. The pencil monitor is one of my favorite jobs. This person's job is to come in, sharpen a big cup of pencils. So first thing in the morning, or during carpool the night before, if they run a little late, they sharpen all those pencils. So that if a pencil breaks, or I forgot to sharpen my pencil, or I came into Mrs. Hip's class too late, I can just go back to that cup and get some sharpened pencils. You'll also see I have some mothers that help me grade. God bless them. And I have my folders, my hanging folders, it's for math, right by the door. That is another way to minimize my intrusion of them into the class. I love it when they come in. I love to see any adult walk in my room after teaching children, you know, for 7 hours a day. It's like, come on in. But, you know, they can just grab what they need. The grader's in there, a calculator's in there, a list, an alphabetical list of all the children's names, and they just plop their grades in. They take it and head out the door. That's also a picture of my homework. up on the whiteboard. As I teach a subject, I update it so that I can see how much homework am I assigning them. If Mr. Shoup comes in and assigns them a big Latin assignment, then I know, oh, I need to back off on my reading that day. All that just makes the kids feel more secure. They know what's going on, and you keep a better tabs on yourself as well. Well, I think a good morning routine sets the tone for your classroom. Let me go back here. Ah! Oops. Gotta love technology. Okay, we're just going to start over. Let's see, what slide am I on? Okay. For me, my morning routine is crucial for the day. At my school, carpool lasts from 15 to 20 minutes if I count the children coming in early. And it used to be I had a very hard time deciding what work to give them because kids are unpacking, they're coming in and out of the room, they're settling in for the day, and the noise would just get louder and louder and louder. And so it was, if I gave them word puzzles, that was a waste of time. You know, with word puzzles, you have the ones who get them done in 2 minutes, and the others haven't even gotten them started. And so this is just wonderful work time. This is when they're bright and shiny. And so it's my time to do review. And so this carpool time, this 15, 20-minute time period when kids are coming in and out, I spend time reviewing or adding another layer of knowledge to them without having something that I have to grade. So the children have a set routine each morning. It's practiced early in the year. They come and they greet me, unpack, sharpen 2 pencils, put their homework in the tray and the files, and they begin their morning work up on the board. This work on the board is my map skills time. I spend all my time, once again, in Europe, and so it's when I kind of roll out my maps, it's when I do a lot of black outline work, and so I will have something like a map, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 different countries, name the countries, color in the map. I might have something like color and name all the landlocked countries in Europe, write them in alphabetical order. If you need some great online maps, I have those after this. We can talk about it. Or if they're struggling in division, I might go to my Saxon math book and assign the supplemental math in the back, just the odd problems or the even problems. This is great morning work. It's reviewing. It's shoring them up. Getting them ready for the next concept. And I'll just have my math book open. It just gives the answer, and I'll say, you know, come on up. Check your answer. See if you got it right. It doesn't show how it's done, but you can see quickly if they've done it. And then if they get it wrong, I don't know about you, but my eyes are getting bad. And when they write the small, I say, go ahead. You got that one wrong. Put it up on the board. And they like to do board work anyway. And so then you can see it because it's this big. And it's, once again, it's just review. You can use it as Bible reading time. I use it for, you know, doing 3-digit multiplication. During all this morning routine time where the children have a set routine each morning, they're working quietly. This is my favorite time of the day because my job is just to watch them walk in the door and greet them. I am happy to see them come in the room. I love being a teacher. And I say, good morning, Miles. And he says, good morning, Mrs. Hip. And I teach them, if I use your name, you have to use my name. If I just say good morning, you still have to say good morning. And I train them. If they don't do it, I make them go back out and try it again. And the first 2 weeks of school, it's rough. You know, it doesn't make my greeting all that fun. But I'll tell you, after a month, They walk in the door. When their foot steps over the threshold, they try and beat me. And they're like, good morning, Mrs. Hip. It's just my best time of the day. And because I've organized myself, everything's ready, it's just my time to really enjoy them when they're all bright and shiny. Also, a big important thing, pencil sharpening must be done before class begins. There is nothing more aggravating than your teaching, and you're really rolling along, and all of a sudden a child raises their hand. And they either have to go to the bathroom, or they have to sharpen their pencils. And then three more have to sharpen their pencils. And then pretty soon you're talking over the top of the pencil sharpener. So my class rule is all pencils must be sharpened before class begins. They have to sharpen two. They have a pencil sharpener within their pencil box. And my favorite thing, I have two pencil sharpeners. I don't know about you, but pencils are just my, they've been a big conundrum for me for years. And my children are just too young to have mechanical pencils. So here's a picture of my children in the morning. You can see they're working on something. They're all working on different things. They're quiet. One's rubbing his eyes. There's some girls over there with the ponytails in the back by the white bookcase. They're probably talking about Justin Bieber. And that's okay. You know, they can come in and greet, and then they begin their pencil sharpening and putting their homework away, and they begin their morning assignment. And notice my cup of sharpened pencils. Well, I can remember my father explaining what to expect at my first funeral. I was only in the first grade, and it was my great-grandmother's death. And I really wasn't sure what I was expected to do. And he explained what I was to do, what I wasn't to do. And it just made me very comfortable. And he did the same thing when we went to restaurants. I remember him teaching me how to use a finger bowl. I mean, do they even have finger bowls anymore? But you know, he would teach me that. And so when the occasion came, I was comfortable. And so I think part of managing expectations is letting your children know what is coming up next and explaining what you expect from them. So make all your routines, procedures, and rules based upon honoring others. Good manners need practice with children. When we go to assembly, I'll say, okay, you know, assembly is only going to last 15 minutes and we have special speakers. I'm going to be looking. I expect to see your eyes on the speaker most of the time. When we're singing hymns, you all need to be singing. That's honoring God. When we say the Pledge of Allegiance, you all need to be doing it. I'm going to be watching. And then I reward them when they do. I said, you know, I just love your behavior in assembly. You are just so good. And I do that for field trips. Don't give them field trip instructions the day of the field trip. They won't listen to a thing you're saying. They're so excited about the field trip. Decide what your procedures are going to be before. I pair them up by two. And I say, when we're having lunch, you know, where we're going, how long the trip's going to take. I'll say, you know, if I can't find you, I need to count you often. If I can't find you with your partner, guess who's going to be your partner? Me. They don't like that. So practice. And I use Matt Whitling's for bathroom breaks. How many of you know just the finger up like this? Okay. This is a great tool that's helped me out many times, is how many times you've been teaching, they raise their hand, I have to go to the bathroom. What I do is teach them at the beginning of the year, when you have to go to the bathroom, that's fine. We have three scheduled bathroom breaks a day, but you still might have to go. Just raise your finger, and I'll nod, and you can go. Writing at the desk. I expect them to be, we're still in grammar school, in what I call writing position. Both hands on your paper. Your feet aren't tucked under you. I'm looking for good handwriting. We're still in grammar school. We're practicing the art of writing. And one of my favorite things that I came up with years ago was a little thing called Class Ready. And what Class Ready is it's a tool for any grades, first through sixth. After a messy project, I use it to check for messes on the desk or floor. I use it to bring order when the room has drifted into chaos and I need everyone's attention quickly. It tells your student we're beginning something new or we've closed a task. So what I do is I say, okay, you know, many times we'll eat inside because we do not have a cafeteria. And I need to check for food on the floor. You know, when you pick up a wrapper and it's no one's? It's always no one's. And I'll say, before you leave, let's be in class ready. And class ready is just your hands are folded and your feet are under the, you know, under the desk, and you're quiet and you're facing forward. And, you know, I'll say, class ready. And they all just get in class ready. And it just calms the chaos. And it's a great thing after a time test because they all tend to say, I'm done. You know, you can say, I'm going to give you a time test. When you're finished, just be in class ready position. And when you see 70% of your kids are in class ready, you know the time's almost up. But it sounds weird, but they like it. Sometimes I just catch them sitting in class ready position. While effective teachers do not overload, remember to be kind to yourself. You are a student too. Rome was not built in a day, but what you're doing lasts a lifetime. So as a student, if you teach several subjects, you will have to learn a little bit each day and layer your knowledge as well. Sometimes that means just the day before a reading assignment. In our literature in fourth grade, it's very difficult for fourth graders. That is my biggest problem, is reading comprehension. The level of vocabulary with the modern day generation, I mean, they didn't grow up on the King James Bible like I did. And I'll have to look things over, just normal words that I would think a fourth grader would know, you might have to catch those and decide, okay, am I going to give them this word meaning, or do I want them to look it up? So just do a little bit of work each day. Don't spend till 6 o'clock, 8 o'clock at night at school. And add 2 projects a year. This might mean tweaking projects. This year I added a play about St. Patrick that took us most of the first quarter to complete, and it was well worth it. But because of the time, I had to take away one of the field trips. And the mothers didn't like it, and I wanted to keep it as well. But you know what you can do when you know how much curriculum you have to cover, so don't give in. Be kind to your kids. Design your lessons for mastery. You are looking for 80s and 90s all the time. Your kids should be getting A's for the most part and B's. If you rolled out an assignment and you really thought it was worthwhile and your top students got low 80s, it's not their fault, it's your fault. So what I do with that, if I've rolled out something, a composition that they're just not ready for, or it's a difficult Veritas Bible worksheet that probably should have been done as a group project, just take a completion grade on it. So what you do is just collect them, give them a check minus, check plus, and then just hand it back. You do not have to grade every single piece of paper. Compliment, compliment, compliment. I have stickers. I have candy. I have fruit. Just remember to catch good behavior and compliment it. And remember to tell them how special they are. And I always try and do 2 things. So I think of 2 specific things, especially on composition, writing, or something where the child has really put forth kind of arduous effort. Say, you know, these are the 2 things I really like about this. Find those 2 things. Well, I have high expectations. That means I expect up here. That means I'm going to get here. If I expect down here, I'm probably going to get here. So I expect 100% participation all the time. Now, I don't get that. But kids should not be in a lazy, disengaged position. They shouldn't be rummaging or goofing around on their desk. I'm always scanning the room to call on those children. I'm looking for 100% participation, no opt-out. When you have 20 to 30%, or really 20% of your class is restless, there's 3 or 4 in there that are just faking it. They look good. Their eyes are open. but they're not listening to a thing you say. It's time for you to get up and get the blood moving. It's time to say, you know what? We've taught this a little bit too long. Let's move on. I might say, we're reading at our desk, and I know I really need to finish this chapter. Okay, y'all, let's go ahead and move to the Bible area, and we get down on the floor and read. Or if I need to get through something, just one more paragraph, I go, let's all stand and read. But one of my favorite games, first through sixth graders love this game, is Jack in the Box. So how many of you know Jack in the Box? Actually, this isn't something I cooked up. I learned it at Regents of Austin. And let's just practice it. Because it's just a great way to get the blood moving. So let's put down our books. And let's stand. And I'll show you Jack in the Box. So reach for the sky. Means up here. Stiff as a board. Your hands are at your side. Jack in the Box. And I'm not going to do it because I'm in a skirt. All the way down. Jack out of the box. Jack in the box. Jack out of the box. And I might add, you know, do 10 jumping jacks. Run in place. Point to the left. Point to the right. Point northeast. What is the square root of 16? And there's mist. You're gently. Let's all do that. Mist. You're kind of thunder. You're stomping. Reach for the sky. Stiff as a board. Jack in the box. And you get so you can do it very quickly. And whoever is the last person is out. Go ahead and have a seat. Thanks for doing the Jack in the Box with me. That's just a great game. And, you know, I just used to do it with first graders, but second graders love it. Sixth graders love it. They'll ask you to do it at recess. Be vigilant. Be looking around. When is it time for a change? When are the kids restless? You might want to put on your hits of the 90s. Watch them do the worm. You know, the lawnmower. It's very fun. Something else I do when I'm teaching subjects that tend to go tedious, one would be grammar. When they get older, they're just not as, especially the boys, they're just not as thrilled about grammar or the grammar chants. But what I'll do is I'll have them match my speed and my tempo. So if I'm doing the article adjective chant, you know, I'll start off on the floor whispering, and then it gets louder and louder and louder. Who doesn't like to yell in the classroom? Or when I'm doing my classification, they have to keep with my tempo. And what I'm doing is I'm checking to make sure that they're, you know, there's good handwriting. I'm not going so fast that they're scribbling. But I'm keeping it pretty fast. At the end of, you know, where you classify the sentence and there's the little box, the little line where it's like sentence 1, 2, 3, 4, I sometimes play the catch me game. So I might say something like for pattern 3, I'll say subject, noun, and they can tell by the look on my face if we're going to play the catch me game. Subject, noun, verb, transitive, I-O, D-O, pattern 3, check, and they'll see if they can catch me. So sometimes if you just turn some tedious projects into a little game, they just really like it. And they'll say, I caught you, and I'll say, no, I caught you. Also during group reading time, that, you know, as we get into the upper grades, the reading assignments are quite long. And you have to do as much in class as you can. And so what I'll do, what I've learned to do, is not let your bad readers, your weak readers, bog you down. But I want everyone to read. So I'll only call on, I'll call, okay, Susie, read. And I'll have her read just 4 sentences. Then I'll say, okay, Miles, go ahead and read. Thank you. And then I'll call on someone else that doesn't look like they're paying attention. And then I'll read for a while. But sometimes what I do after I've been reading along, you know, a few paragraphs, is I'll do something to see if they are with me. And it's just a great little tool to make sure there's 100% participation. I've highlighted this from The Adventures of Robin Hood. And I'll give an example of what I mean. So the highlighted portion, what I'll do is I'll pause at a word, and then they fill it in. So let's see if you can do it. By the rood, you'll not pass this way, bellowed the friar, until you've made a full apology to the fair Clorinda and myself for all terms, taunts, and other words of slander. uttered in the hearing of these good... Okay. So I won't do that all the time, but I'll do it for a while, like a paragraph, and then I'll stop it. And they get so my children will just fill it in real fast. By Christmas, they're just filling it in, like, we're with you, Mrs. Hip. So it's a great way to have 100% participation and not let your reading drag or bog down. Review. This is the first year I've done the most review I've ever done, and it's the first year I've had kids very excited about history and Bible. I'm still getting emails from mothers saying, can we still check out books in your library? Can I go to the office? I promise I'll return your fourth grade books. And I really think it's because I did so much review in history with games that the children own this knowledge. And so they're competent and they have confidence and they want to know more about it. And so what I mean by review isn't just, you know, give them a worksheet and fill in the blanks. But what I do with review is turn it into games. And I have three different games I play. My favorite game is Team A, Team B. And Team A, Team B is just, you just divide half the room in class, half the class in half. Your smart kids are on both sides of the room. And a representative from Team A comes up, a representative from Team B. And they approach the whiteboard and you'll say, okay, who was crowned king in Westminster Abbey on Christmas Day in 1066? Begin. And when they write it and get it done, whoever does that first is the winner. So that's one game I play for review. Another game I play is for all tests is I give them most of the questions. And we play the question game. And so I have three groups around the room, and they can use their Veritas cards and come up with the answers. And I ask the question, and then I'll say, ready. And whatever team raises their hand first, I call on. And they can use their cards, but they can't read from their cards. So that way, they get practice with writing it correctly, using the correct vocabulary in the right part of speech. You know how sometimes they don't understand the Veritas vocabulary? It gives you a good handle on, do they really understand what they're talking about? And at the same time, they're getting review. Another game I just learned for spelling through a substitute that came to our school was called Sparkle. How many of you know that? That's, okay. That is a great spelling review where you just move all the desks out, get in a circle, and begin to spell a word. So if it's little, it would be the first person says L, then the next person says I, and then T, T, L, E. And when you're finished with that, the next person goes, Sparkle. And then whoever misses it sits down. So just think about good ways for review. And sometimes you have to refashion or correct misinformation. And the best way to do that is just ask questions. Sometimes that's just part of my review. For example, I might say, you know, why was King Alfred called King Alfred the Great? You know, what made him so great, Kendra? Can you tell me some reasons why was he so great with his people? And she might be able to think of one, but she doesn't have the whole truth. She might have a partial truth. And I'll say, you know, you were red hot. That was good. But does anyone have anything to add to that? And then you call on someone else who has the answer. And then you go back to Kendra. So Kendra, tell us again, what made Alfred so great? And so if you find that the class is weak on something or she still didn't get it, you might want to turn it into a great Team A, Team B question later. Remember, you want to review short-term things, and then a month later, bring it back. And then another, after, you know, 6 months, bring back the things that you learned earlier in the year. Compliment, give prizes, go back later. Expect 100% participation. Well, I always feel the pressure of my lack of time with the huge amount of curriculum to teach. But give your children time to tell you their stories. You'll just know them so much better. You know, I teach in Texas, so the boys want to tell me their hunting stories. You know, if you're in the Northeast, maybe they want to tell you their sailing stories. Or just girl talk has its place. We're all pilgrims headed to the celestial city. How many of you know what book that's from? All right, good for you. But, you know, we're just as teachers, just farther up the path. And so we need to really know that these children are our brothers and sisters in Christ. And what you really remember from a teacher is the relationship. You know, some of my best teachers just loved me. And that's really the most important thing after all, right? Consistent discipline should just be part of your daily routine. You know, I wish we could just all get along. Didn't he pass away recently? Anyway, you know, that would be great, but it's just not like that. These children need to learn, and really with a consistent discipline, rules teach them is we reap what we sow. Good choices bring good results. Bad choices have consequences. So some teachers have just a saying listed up that, for example, honor God, honor others, honor God's property. My classroom rules are very specific because they have my morning routine up there. So, for example, I have begin each morning by turning in all homework and sharpening two pencils, begin the assignment listed on the board. That's a big part of my morning routine. It's part of my review time and my layering time, so it's important to me. So it's up on my classroom rules. And then I have more specific rules, you know, like raise your hand before speaking and so on and so forth. Obedience is a blessing to the child. It produces better grades and better comments on report cards. I pretty much follow Matt Whitling's method of discipline, or much of it. Any public sin, like mockery or calling out in class, if it's done openly, I'll pretty much call it out openly. What are you supposed to do? Aren't you supposed to raise your hand before speaking? What rule did you break? I've worn this before with you. Do you want to go and put your name on the board? And when they put their name on the board, they lose recess. And at some point after three times that week, it might be they lose PE. And PE is my trump card. In fourth grade, they have, in my school, they have it every day for half an hour. So it's kind of more of a punishment for me, but they really do not want to lose PE. When it gets to their losing PE, it's time for a parent call, and I'll say, you know, your son, your daughter just isn't obeying. They're not obeying these specific rules, and I can point to them. They're in my classroom. They're posted. I talk about my rules on back-to-school night, what I expect in my classroom. So, you know, the parent is usually on board. But sometimes with a parent-teacher conference, you just need to refer to Scripture. We all should be on the same page about the consistency and the importance of discipline. What does the Bible have to say? Well, train up a child in the way he should go, even when he's old, and will not depart from it. He who withholds his rod hates his son, but he who loves him disciplines him diligently. Fathers, do not exasperate your children so that they will not lose heart. Do not be deceived. God is not mocked. For whatsoever a man sows, this will he also reap. And this, I think, is really one of the most important things, is you're teaching that child obedience when they're young so that when they're an adult, they'll be obedient to God. And always remember, you know, no matter what discipline problem, tomorrow is a new day. When they walk in the morning, I'm going to have that big smile ready. I'm going to have that greeting ready, and it's going to be even brighter. And something that really works for me, and I tend to turn to it as a last resort, but pray for that child. Pray for that situation. When parent conferences are not working, you know, prayer has just always worked for me. Prayer changes things. Well, how do you know that you're being successful? If someone were to walk into your classroom, all the students are working, there's little wasted time, and the classroom is a relaxed but work-oriented place. I want to thank you for attending this workshop. While I was thinking about this workshop, I'm like, there, you know, what kind of Bible verse, Lord, do you have for me? And this promise came to me from Philippians as I was planning my talk. It has such wonderful and hopeful words for us that we're not finished, and that's okay. For I'm confident of this very thing, that he who began a good work in you will perfect it until the day of Jesus Christ. From Philippians 1:6. God bless you.
Filled in blank.